You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
You are very welcome to part of a bigger thing with Governor Bee in conversation with Jordan Stevens. In Governor Bee's interview with The Guardian earlier this year, he was quoted saying, "There is something beautiful in being open to figuring things out together." And in Jordan Stevens' book, Avoidance, Drugs, Heartbreak, and Dogs, and there are dogs in it, describes himself as a warrior and a wanderer. Greenbelt, we have got the privilege this afternoon of hearing two authors, musicians, social commentators, and most of all, men who are not afraid to wander and navigate real life in an honest way. This afternoon, they are interrogating and illuminating the phenomenon of the manosphere and what it means to explore masculinity today. We are thrilled to have them. Give them a huge pagoda welcome.
Yo. Oh. This is fucking cool, man.
Good afternoon, everyone. They actually warned us that you were a lovely crowd, and they lied. And I'm joking. They're telling the truth. It's good to be here. My mum named me Isaac. That is my government name. I'm getting a bit old now, so it feels weird to just always introduce myself as a governor, especially when I'm talking to people that are using their real names. I'm a rapper, an author, a broadcaster, and I have the pleasure of speaking to, I was going to talk as if I don't already know you then, but I'm going to call you my brother, Jordan Stevens. You do a lot of different things. How do you prefer to be introduced?
Warrior and wanderer, apparently. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out which kind of warrior I meant at the time. Was I strong or fearful? But maybe both. That's the key, a warrior and a warrior. But I think I'm very proud of having written a book. So I do like author first. Well, writer and performer.
Yeah. We'll go with that. The theme of Greenbelt this year is Let It All Go. What is something that you've let go of in the past couple of years that you didn't miss as much as you thought you would? It could be as deep, serious, silly as you want it to be.
Fucking hell. As a first question, sorry, are there kids here? Sorry. Apologies. I will be sweat. Do I have to do a disclaimer? I really have a potty mouth. I'm so sorry. Just from the jump, I will try my best. Also, just before I answer the question, can I just say thank you so much for coming here? Honestly, my mind is blown. This is really, there's a lot of warmth and love, and I appreciate you. Like, honestly, I really, really mean that. Like, I really, really genuinely mean that. Like, you guys is so, like, enriching. I just feel full of, like, can feel the energy. Oh, thank you. You're kind. Big up. But letting go. I feel one thing I say to my friends who are, like, entering their 30s, for example, I have found, now I'm 34, that one of the things that I have managed to let go of a little bit is constantly worrying about, let's say, how I'm perceived, which I think doesn't come so as much from, I feel like I have strengthened my inner core slightly, but I am actually still very thin skinned. So I have like my own personal like upset that I can't please everyone all the time, but I don't necessarily identify with that as much as I might have done in my 20s, where I would let that like become like a massive core issue. I would just be like, you know, I feel like I the speed in which I feel grief and then let that go, like mini grief, is a lot quicker. So I think that's come with age. I think I've honestly experienced so much embarrassment and rejection in my life that by this point I'm like, yeah, fuck it. Sorry. I like, it's like, yeah, I've been here before. You know?
I do know. I feel like every time Jordan swears, he should promise to give you £1. Is that a deal?
You will be a millionaire. It's such an adaptable word.
Picking up on what you said about how you're perceived, I feel like because you're good at so many things, a lot of the perception can be this person is amazing. He's a role model. He's so good at the things that he speaks about. He's so good at art and writing and creativity. Is there anything that you're kind of bad at? Like, yes. And wanna improve on?
No, it's so wild. It's such a... Okay, firstly, finances from the jump. can't do numbers. No, it's so fascinating you say that because I actually, I'm going to be fully transparent here. I just this morning, I have a friend, very close friend and mentor in my life called Donna Lancaster. I talk about her all the time. She's an incredible woman. I owe a lot of my emotional journey to her. And we do this thing sometimes where we all leave voice notes as uncensored and free as possible in the morning, like fresh voice notes of just what's upsetting us. And literally this morning, it's so weird that you've asked me that. My spiral was, I'm actually finding it incredibly difficult to hear people when they say things like that to me, in terms of, I think that you are an amazing voice, or you are articulate, or you are da 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 da, because it, for me, for some reason, I process it as like a separation. I really don't enjoy feeling separate. Like, I really don't enjoy being what's considered to be like famous, or I don't enjoy the separation that comes with it. I really love people, like truly love people, and I can't even define the metrics in which I would judge whether or not someone is good at something. There's so many things that where that goodness is subjective. I don't think I'm a good person, not because I don't do things that help community, but because I'm unsure what that standard of goodness even is and who set that standard, you know? In terms of, like, I can say I'm apt, you know? I really enjoy expressing myself creatively. I'm very curious, and sometimes that can lend itself to becoming good at something because I'm genuinely interested. But in terms of me, that meaning that, like, I hold a position, you know, that's different from, like, you know, I don't know, a person who considers themselves an everyday person. I really hate that, because everybody has something to offer. And even as I'm saying it, I'm hearing myself, like, I'm not trying to say that for brownie points. I genuinely believe it. I really think that communities are based off of, you know, as an organism. Like, everybody plays a role. Everybody plays a part in something functioning. And I currently, there's no end to this answer, but I currently feel incredibly uncomfortable with the idea that, like, I myself would be the, like, leader of a movement, or like a face in a movement. I would rather just be part of a bigger thing. Yeah. I'd rather actually even be anonymous in part of that movement, you know, because there are so many people who don't get the same like reception as me, who I could argue work harder and are on the front lines constantly, you know. So
yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Based on your answer, let's take it back to before you got the level of kind of perception that you have now. Obviously, it's the human condition. I guess we're all kind of perceiving other people in one way or another, but as a teenager, or as far back as you want to go, what did community look like for you? I know you were quite young when you got famous anyway. Was it 19 you had your first number one?
Oh, what? I've only had one number. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
19 or 20, I don't know.
Okay. But before that, so obviously I know a bit about Audio Active, which you can explain a bit about. But what did community look like growing up?
So, I think... well, firstly, I actually wanted to say, for community, sorry, I was getting stuck on the last question with the things I'm bad at, because I was going to list you also aside of that answer.
You can still answer that.
I was going to list loads of things.
You can say whatever you want to say.
There are loads of things that I'm practically bad at. Organizing, like you know, being able to remember certain dates, you know what I mean? Turning up on time, all that kind of stuff. But I'm here, so that's all good. community. So one thing that springs to mind when you say that is, like, I think I'm an example of the benefits of a diverse community, right? So aside from the fact that I owe my confidence in writing music to a youth club, which is why you and I often work with each other on re-engaging with youth clubs. Yeah, big up youth clubs, come on. Which is, you know, The funny thing about youth clubs, I don't know if you guys know, but like I've been pulled into some rooms recently with important politicians who are like, we're going to put money into youth clubs. We want you to promote it. And for me, I'm so cynical with the politics that I'm like, that's how bad things have got economically that they're like, oh, actually we need people to be inspired as young people. Yeah, duh. Like uninspired people not engaging with the economy. Yeah, you know, we told you that 10 years ago, but whatever. But yeah, so I'm a product of that. I'm a product of a third space that has given me confidence. I'm a product of being temporarily and consistently raised by people outside of my immediate circle, right? I was predominantly with my mom. My dad was around, but he wasn't in the house. For loads of people, it's a village. I really believe that. I really, 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 really believe in the village. And one of the most interesting things about my mum's village was that it was honestly like a complete plethora of different human beings. My godfather is this kind of incredible singer, gay black man who was in himself going through his own kind of tension with identity, like what he could sing about, how much he could truly be himself. Like I was almost observing that as a child. Like, and then, you know, my mum had a friend who was like, gay black man, lesbian mate, artist mate. I'd have like a friend who was like a Muslim friend. It was like this bizarre. I was constantly in all these different spaces with different foods, and I lived on an estate. And you know what? Like on an estate, I lived above like a Cypriot, like a Jamaican, someone from East London who'd gone northwest or whatever. Like it's this whole constant. I didn't have a clear definition of what a person was or whatever a person was. And so I think what that's left me with is a natural desire to be compassionate, even if I don't understand immediately what it is. Do you know what I mean? Just because I'm around it. Like I've said this a number of times, but it's important because homophobia is still a real issue, especially with in like some male communities, which I do think is still rooted in misogyny. But like I remember being so comfortable around queerness as a boy that when a kid told me, I remember when I was like 7 and I had this bully called Alistair. I'm gonna call him out. Fuck, sorry.
£1.
Alistair. And I remember he turned around and he called me a gaylord, and I said, thank you. I literally did. So funny. And I remember him, I mean, if anybody, I'm sure you guys have caught on to this already, but that is the best way to deal with somebody trying to insult you, because he looked so baffled. He was like,
what do I do now?
That was not the intended outcome. I thought, like, Lord of the Gays, that sounds incredible. What a title. Thanks, bro. I went home, I was like, Mom, guess what he called me today? Gaylord. Woo! So, yeah, so that, like, I just had no, so it was having that, like, I've always been open for that reason, you know? So the community means a lot to me in that respect. You get to learn. And that's also another reason why youth centers have been so important, because especially like a cultural cauldron like London, that is where you humanize a person who might be completely different to you culturally, right? And that's important, yeah. You know?
100%. Great answer, by the way. I'm not going to say that after every answer, but that was a really good answer. Before we get on into your book, I read an interview where I think you were talking about the music industry, and you said the industry had two 22-year-olds, he was talking about yourself and Harley, who was also in Rizzle Kicks, falling apart with no one to catch them. And I've just heard you talk about your upbringing that was, you know, very rich, cultured, good community, and life's never simple. You can still end up in a bad place. What would have been helpful for you as a 22-year-old in terms of being caught? What could your friends, your family, people that interacted with you in some kind of way, what could they have done to help you in that moment?
Yeah, man, that's tough. I think like there's so many nuances to my specific situation at 22. I'm happy to admit that I think I would discourage a young person from being exposed to fame. I don't really believe in, you know, being overly, I wouldn't like want to control or, you know, dictate somebody's choices. But I certainly, if I was asked, you know, do you think it's a good idea for this person to be exposed to public scrutiny below the age of 25, I'd probably say no. I think there's like a long track record of reasons as to why that would be a really bad idea. And I don't think there's enough pros to be like, I don't think there's a list of people where you're like, oh, this worked out, you know? It's just like, unfortunately, a list quite the contrary. I'm quite lucky, I think, to have survived. And I think nobody in my immediate circle knew or was prepared for what that meant. And everybody was triggered in their own ways, you know? So I think to answer your question, you know, what do you do with an overwhelmed 22-year-old? You know, I think assign them mentors that like have had experience of that specific scenario and are able to guide them. You know, that's one of the, I think, responsibilities we have in community as we grow older. You know, I'm hoping I'm not considered an elder yet, but I'm definitely an elder. I'm definitely older than some people. So like, if I got like someone in their early 20s, whatever, chatting to me, it's my responsibility, man. Like, I feel like that's like a ancient human responsibility to be like, listen, that's why I wrote the book. That's why I'm having this chat. It's like, I don't think my way of life is gospel. I don't think I have the answers. All I do know is I've picked a path. And for some people, that path might be important. That's it. So if somebody had come to me at 22 and been like, yo, bro, I was battling with the same thing, da 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 da, here's how I had handled it, chances are I'd go, okay, at least there's some kind of map. At least there's a map. Whether or not I choose it is a different question. But also, just be black and white about it. The entertainment industry is incredibly exploitative, and the music industry specifically is arguably the worst. Mm-hmm. Just to put it into perspective, right? There is a man called Robert Greene who wrote a book called 48 Laws of Power, right? For some people, that's an incredibly massive red flag. If you see a guy reading that book, you need to stay well away. but there are, it can also just be an interesting book for people who are intrigued. Basically, this man studied like all tyrants throughout the history of time and put together these 48 laws that tied everybody together. And you know, if you were to abide by these laws, you could harness power. I think Robert Greene, I really believe that he knows that this isn't an actual instruction of how to be a good human. He's actually saying the opposite. He's saying that we live in a world dictated by this anti-human behavior. And if you want to win at that game, here's what you do, right? So that's the context of Robert Greene. He did another version of that book with 50 Cent, right? Called The 50th Law. And in the interviews for that book, he said, and by the way, sorry, he wrote 48 Laws of Power because he was inspired by what he saw in Hollywood. There's Robert Greene. So he was working in Hollywood and he was seeing all these big wigs battling each other, undercutting each other, you know, utilizing these laws of power in order to amass it. He said that the music industry was the most exploitative thing he'd ever seen. And he had been in Hollywood and written a book about tyrants, right? So that gives you the extent, because he's looking at it from the purely from like the contractual basis forwards, right? You are essentially locking young, impressionable minds into deals, situations with no support, right? Someone made the point, for example, that like with streaming, you would have to achieve, I don't know, a certain amount of plays a month, right? Like 800,000 monthly listeners, which is a lot of people, to achieve a wage like similar to like a high earner in the city, right? But you then have to pay for all of your costs. If you want to have therapy, you got to pay for that. You want private insurance, you got private health care, you got to pay for that. All of these are costs that come afterwards. If you're a CEO, if you hold a high position in Spotify, so if you just work in Spotify and you are not the person creating the products that keep Spotify alive, you get paid the same wage and have all of the health benefits covered. Do you understand what I'm saying? So it's like without the artist, they wouldn't even have that, and they're not covered. It would make more sense to just work for Spotify, which I think is wild. Anyways, that's putting it into perspective. But so I do think, yeah, what would have been lovely at 22 is for somebody to just basically say, drink more water, stay hydrated, so you know. And yeah, I think like don't rush, you know? And I came to that conclusion myself, but through, unfortunately, 3 to 4 years of pretty hard addiction.
A book that is a massive green flag if someone is walking around with it is one called Avoidance, Drugs, Heartbreak and Dogs, right, written by Jordan Stevens. Yeah, he'll be signing it after 5 p.m., is that?
Yeah, 5 p.m., I'm signing it, yeah, yeah.
I'm going to go back to what you said about not really like him being perceived as someone that's great at a lot of stuff.
Right.
In this book, you highlight
thanks,
a lot of your...
Thanks for re-triggering me. I
no problem.
Got through that
no
already.
Problem. It's for a reason. I feel like in this book, you highlight a lot of flaws. Do you think that that is almost like a fight against being this kind of role model by saying, hey, look, guys, I haven't got it all figured out.
No. No, no, it's not. I haven't got it all figured out. I literally don't. That's not so mad. I really don't. It stresses me out slightly that people think I do. The reason why I was so honest in my book and was pointing out my flaws was literally because I read a book. I read an essay by a woman called Philippa Snow, which is called, as you know, means violence, right? And it really stayed with me because she was essentially comparing Marina Abramovich, who's a famous performance artist, for those of you who don't know, she is best known for a performance piece of performance art where she basically stood naked in a room and people were allowed to do anything to her for 12 hours. It was harrowing, as you might have concluded in your mind already, but it was incredibly powerful. That's what she's best known for. She compared Marina Abramovich to Jackass, right? And what I thought was so interesting about why she was saying that is because she feels that there was a class divide in our perception of Jackass, because ultimately why people are compelled by that show is because of the brotherhood of it. Even though it appears like these men are just battering each other, if you are harming yourself on screen, the audience are bound to you. There is an explicit vulnerability in the idea of being harmed, especially by people who are your mates, right? Like, and so her argument is we're in a relationship with these guys, but we have just been convinced that it's less important than Marina Abramovich because she's doing it in the V&A. You know what I'm saying? And then I thought to myself, you know, that is a huge part of entertainment, isn't it? It's like I'm essentially harming myself. I'm a clown in certain spaces. I've always been a clown for attention, you know, when I'm younger. And that's because I'm wanting people to be closer to me, right? So from feeling that out, I thought, well, there's literally no point in me writing this book unless I write things that are actively painful, because those are the moments where the audience reading it will feel closer, because that is what breeds connection, right? Is vulnerability. If I was to be constantly censored or protective of my persona, I just don't think there's any point in writing a book. And my dream is that the book lives beyond my little life. That's my dream. Whether it will happen, I don't know, but I have to dream for that, you know? I want to have a book that's bought for generations. That's the dream. So I can't get too caught up on like, oh, maybe if I say that, you know, I like obsessively thought about my ex for 3 weeks, someone might think I'm a weirdo. It's like, no, I know people think that, and I know people feel that, because it's in some cases very human. So let's talk about it. And I think the only way I can do that is by showing how it's affected me. Yeah. I don't want to write anything prescriptive. I don't think I have the gospel. I know that I feel most connected to a person if they bear their truth, you know, and it's that that's my truth. And I want it to be as real as possible. Thank you. It's facts though, right? That is like, vulnerability, that is like really, that is in our lives, the people we feel closest to will often be people who are there in our weakest moments, even if we want to deny that. And that denial happens a lot in the male community, understandably, because of how we've been conditioned. But even in that space, like even people you've had fights with, even if it's go to that far, you know, that you're still connected. That's vulnerable. That's a vulnerable space. You know, I think we have completely distorted views of intimacy and sex because there's no way of escaping the reality that intimacy is vulnerable. There's no way you can make the words as like violent as you like. You can add all the bravado and all the kind of like horrendous kind of patriarchal stuff that I would rather reverse. You can add all of that. You cannot change the fact that in that moment you are truly vulnerable, and that's what you're afraid of. You're afraid of the fact that you have connected or you have exposed yourself, and that's brought you closer to a person. Some people welcome that, and I think they feel better for it. Some people fight that, and I don't think their life is as fun. Yeah,
man. I want to talk about masculinity, because that level of vulnerability, as a lot of people in here will know, is not stereotypically a masculine thing.
No, it's not.
To do. I know that you've retired using the term toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
Why?
No, only just because it's that term specifically It's weird, you know, because the term thing is so, I'm noticing the cycles of it a lot, right? When I used the term toxic masculinity in like 2017, it was so clearly an addition in addition to masculinity, right? Otherwise, we just say masculinity. So I was like, oh, you know, it's masculinity that's toxic. Like, it was very clear that it wasn't defining all masculinity. But I think somehow across the along the way, it's become inextricably linked to the idea of masculinity. And so I just thought it'd be interesting to kind of use some other words. So like hypermasculinity, maybe hyper is less, you know, aggressive. Machoism, kind of maybe that people can... That the idea of performance maybe is more accessible with machoism. So I guess I do have a responsibility to try and communicate to people. And if people are turning off because of that, then I can use other terms. Yeah. However, recently, which is blowing my little mind, it's like the sensitivity to words, I think, is going into a space that I don't understand. I was looking through comments the other day, and a man commented saying, As soon as I hear somebody use the term patriarchy, I will nod in politely, but I will switch off. And it had like 1,000 likes. And I remember thinking, that's now what we're having to, I'm now going to have to use, what other word is there to describe the entire system? Like, I can't, and I argue with this guy all the time where he's like, no, man, it's low resolution because, you know, there are active issues for men day to day. And I said, I know that. I'm not denying that. I came up in a form of I'm from the school of feminism of bell hooks, right? I can't remember what wave that is. It's like second or third. Yeah, shout out bell hooks. But bell hooks, I feel like people, I don't think people have read her, man, because this was the foundational principle of her work. She was like, first victim of patriarchy, men. That's how from the jump, that's it, like bang. That's the first thing. Cut men from their bodies. That's how we keep this system alive and destructive, right? But now I'm having to fight people who are denying the system, and I have to go to him like, dude, the moment you provide to me two things, I will accept this idea that patriarchy is low resolution. One, and you can use this, by the way, if people are being annoying about patriarchy. One, if you present me even one mainstream religious story that is based in there being like an omnipresent feminine figure, right, that has any sort of authority across the planet, oh, listen, currently the main major religions that we engage with slyly blame women for everything. Sorry. That's just my opinion. I'm sorry for anybody who is of faith. I mean, there are nuances for sure, but like even in like even Buddhism, which I love, there's like scripture in Buddhism that's like women will prevent you from transcendence. Like, what are we talking about, right? And then shout out Buddhism, by the way. Sorry.
Also really cute how you said sorry to me, bro. It's cool, man. I love you.
No, because
cool,
you're Christian. Man. I know, but I'm saying, but it's bro. Like they're blaming Eve, man. She ate an apple. Like, get over it. I'm joking. No. Sorry. No, but it's just mad to me. Like, my friends fight me on it. They're like, well, she shouldn't have eaten it. And I'm like, you can't blame her for everything. Like, and also, snakes are cool, man. I'm giving them bad PR. Anyway, so that's one side of it. And also, it's like, I still am yet to see a law that has been put in place in the world by exclusively women that only affects men. And only damages men. If I see that law, that's what I mean. If I see that law, so I'm about to go on a rant here.
Nah, go. Not, that's why we're here.
I'm not. No. But it's clear. Like, I'm literally. And it's important for the men in the room too, because it's like I really want us to separate ourselves from the idea that it's, you know, the father ruler terminology of patriarchy. It's not to say that being a dad is a bad thing. It's the best thing ever. Like, men are incredible, right? The idea is that historically a system has been built on, I'd say, a lack of information and a desire for control and accumulation and whatever else. It's not a personal insult to men, right? It really isn't. Like, in there is a glorious world where fathers, as the many of them are existing in a state of equity within their community, right? I don't know any mums who are naming their daughter after themselves and calling her like Lisa Junior. I don't know. I don't understand. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like this is all It's literally like, I don't understand. It's like, why are you, why am I having to live in another reality because you're upset about a word? And also, it's the most anti-masculine thing ever. Like, you've switched off because you heard a word. Like, that's like the most anti-stoic thing in the world ever. Like, how can you just, if it's upsetting, fine, but like at least have the wherewithal to understand that it might mean something different to you, but still listen to the point. That's actually childish to just be like, hey, you use patriarchy, I'm not listening. That is, you know, and then they'll say that, and then they'll go on and say that's what women do. But anyway, it really bugs me at the moment because I just, we've all got the same fight. And yes, I understand that some people will use the term patriarchy loosely and maybe use it in sweepingly, but like, yeah, right, every movement in the world ever in life has a small proportion of people who abuse what it is that they're supposed to be saying, using, doing, identifying as. Like, there's no perfect community, right? So I refuse to engage with somebody who won't discuss, like, in objective terms how we've ended up here, because there are some 18-year-old girls online that have just learned about fourth-wave feminism who are like shouting at you because they're upset because their boyfriend shit. Like, that's not enough. That's not enough.
I feel like you're cooking, so I'm kind of gonna scrap my questions and just let you cook.
Sorry. No, but that's like, it's on my mind, bro. I've done like 4 TikToks. I haven't even put them out yet. They're in the draft. Just because I'm just like, oh, I can't ask myself, like, can I be bothered with the backlash? Like, it's not like I, because everything I'm doing is out of a love for men. I'm a man. I am.
I'm going to give you £1 for that.
No, I didn't. I held myself. I am one. Like, the idea that I wouldn't be, that everything would be against the, like, everything I say and do and stand for is for the benefit of my entire community. Like, that's the point. I don't understand what people think I'm doing. Like, I'm not saying it to make someone feel bad. Like, I want to be a good dad. The men around me in my life are incredible dads. That's like, I don't know what do they think I'm trying to do? Mm. What do they think I'm trying to do, Isaac? Tell me.
I mean, I would love to, but I think you're trying to do some great things for,
all right, thanks,
for the men. Also, my book's called Toxic Masculinity. Still get it, even though we're not using that term anymore. Thank you.
But wait.
Appreciate that.
But wait. When did you release it?
I released it in 2021, something like that.
Oh, that's a bit late, you know. You're still
a bit late, yeah.
I feel like we've moved on by then, bro. That's me. You started writing it in 2018.
Yeah, no, I did. When I shift these copies, I'll rename it and then we'll...
People get it though. Look, ultimately our responsibility is for people to understand, you know, it might not be in the words we like, but I understand what you're saying. People understand what's being said, right? But 100%. It is tough. The hardest thing in life is to, you know, we are all emotional creatures, right? There are many validated reasons to be angry, and sometimes it'll slip into collective punishment, maybe, or slip into an idea projected onto another human being. It's okay as long as we can catch ourselves, you know. That's where I'm at with it. Yeah,
facts. Let's play a game of things Jordan may or may not have said.
Okay.
The elephant in the room isn't feminism or Andrew Tate. It is wealth inequality. For anyone that thinks, I thought it was more of a cultural problem, can you unpack that?
Did I say all of that? But which bit did I stop saying? Was it the...
I kind of just paraphrased it. But yeah.
I think what was really interesting, the reason why wealth inequality is an interesting part of the conversation around the manosphere and is kind of like pushback against feminism. Like I say, I think there's a middle between all of it, right? I think that there has been, like we were just saying before, there was a generation of teenage boys who grew up post Me Too in a world where there were messages being said that I don't feel they could contextualize on the basis that they were young, right? Which made them very, very susceptible to immature adults who then radicalized them, right? Mm-hmm. And I think we've been dealing with the backlash of that. But I don't personally feel like their experience isn't important, right? If you're a 14-year-old boy and everyone's saying that you and everyone who's like you is trash or like you, whatever, or like that, I can imagine that being confusing, especially at that time where like everybody's being tribal, everyone's trying to leverage, like teenagers, sorry for the teenagers in the crowd, but teenagers are on balance awful, just generally. Just like, no, but like you're supposed to be. That's what I'm saying, you're supposed to be. Like my expectations of teenagers are low because it's like, when else are you supposed to make mistakes, bro? Like when you say a thing and go, oh, that didn't feel good. Or like, or you do a thing and be like, oh, I don't think that's worked out. Do you know what I mean? I say to teenage boys, like, if you want a manosphere and they're telling you that women are awful, like, do you want to have intimacy with women, I think that thinking they're awful is a really bad start, you know, and you'll find that out because they won't. Yeah, anyway. And funnily enough, Gen Alpha are struggling in that department. So it's like, it's self-explanatory. A lot of the time I say, like, I would love it. I'd love to be preventative, but ultimately these people will find out through experience, you know? Like, after that Manosphere doc with Louis Theroux, people are talking about HS Tiki Toki. Oh, he's so awful. The guy's 22. I can promise you right now, that is not a sustainable way to live. I would rather he wasn't, like, as visible as he is. Facts, right? There's a responsibility to social media for that. But, like, do I think that this person's lifestyle and outlook is going to serve him well for more than 6 years? Absolutely not. Mm. I said this about the Tates 6 years ago. Look at him. Mm. The guy, like it has been one of the most, like, it's not even tragic because I can't stand the man. Like, it's one of his most predictably frustrating, and like, it's sad that so many people have been damaged in this guy throughout this man's like time. But they found out that they've been lying about the amount of money they have, so they've been duping people as they always have done. They've been scamming boys, they've been scamming men for years and years. They've been abusing women. They've been horrendous people, and they are both miserable. They've told everybody they're miserable. They're like, it's just out of this world that anybody for any moment could have aligned themselves with that, other than teenagers, because they literally don't know, you know. So I can't remember what the question was, but I've gone off on one there. But like, he built, as a good example of it, is he built his entire personality, Andrew Tate, on being a winner. He used to tweet things going, sorry that you're not like me, you're a loser. He, just so for a moment, let's just revel in a moment of like pure universal justice, right? No, right, let's revel in this, right? Firstly, I'm hoping he goes away for a long time, but even prior to this, he bought shares in Misfits Boxing, right? This is what he did. And in order to promote the boxing company he had bought to further his investment, he booked himself a fight on Misfits Boxing. He booked his fight against a Love Island star called Chase D'Amour, right? Which in boxing terms is called a journeyman, right? It's somebody who they know that they can beat because it looks good and whatever else. He got battered. Genuinely battered. And he then proceeded in the following week to blame God. He said, I don't know why I wasn't so good in that third round. God must have had a different plan for me. Brother, you didn't do enough cardio. That's it. Like, this guy spent his whole career talking about accountability, and he's blaming whatever. He's blaming, right? Do you know what I'm saying? And he's there going like, and then, just to add the cherry on top, he goes, it's really unfair because I'm just depressed all the time. He literally got famous for saying depression isn't real. Like, it's upsetting. It's upsetting that it's like that obvious how unsustainable that livelihood is. So again, cannot remember what your question was, but like,
that's cool.
What was it again?
You answered it. Whatever it was, you answered it.
No. What was it again? Because I wanted to, I would have rounded off to something. I can't remember what the beginning.
No, I was talking about the kind of wealth inequality versus.
Yes, right.
Feminism.
Sorry. Yeah. Jesus. Okay, right. So what I meant was. So we have this kind of like influx of attention in this space, but I think the susceptibility to people who are that immature and that scammers of that degree are because like there is the defined role and purpose of, let's say, a young man is going through a massive transition and it's less clear. And a lot of that clarity, that lack of clarity, has come as a result of there being not much to hold on to. You know, again, young people, can you save up to get a house? No. You know, we have these conversations, like youth clubs are talking about dissipating in the last 15 years. All of these situations where you might be inspired or feel like there's a goal is going, right? Which again, leaves you in a vulnerable position. And I read a book about, it's called The Mass Psychology of Fascism by this guy called William Reich. It was written in like the early 1940s. And he says in that book that one of the predeterminers for fascism in that time were men suppressing their own self-pleasure in the 40s. And then I'm looking at the Manosphere, who have one of their proudest, arguably healthiest elements of the Manosphere, is the no-fat movement, right? Who are refusing to touch themselves to, they call it the semen retention thing, right? To like build their, I don't know, what aura, I don't know what it is. And it's like seen as, and you know, it's kind of healthy in a way, because it's like, I guess if you're not engaging with something, but then it does go a bit like, oh, maybe you just like hate intimacy. I don't know. But the fact that I've read a book, nearly 100 years ago, saying that that lack of control you find in the political sphere becomes like a, it can be reflected in how someone feels about themselves sexually is fascinating to me. So it's like nothing new under the sun. We've got all this technology, all of these new ideas, but actually we just are reflecting back a lack of control in greater society, you know?
Word. Yeah, before we go to Q&A and hear some questions from you lovely people, I wanted to ask, I know what you're against. What do you believe in? And it doesn't have to be a faith per se. It can be if you want it to, but what do you believe in, man?
A omnipresent, all-knowing female deity. No, joke. that's hilarious. Well, it depends how far-fetched you want to go, because I am a hippie, unapologetic, right? I'm an unapologetic hippie. I feel all of the PR on hippies is deep, deep counterinsurgency. The fact that for such a long time people could use hippie as an insult, like just think about it, bro. People were like, oh, what are you, a tree hugger? Yeah. Yeah, I want to hug a tree. What are we talking about? Like, how is that a metric of being a bad person? They're like, oh, what, do you like the earth? Yeah. I like the earth. Like, it's crazy. And then they'll be like, oh, all hippies are just like trust fund kids. Yeah, again, that's what, you've got a lot of money. You've had the boot taken off your neck. What's the first thing you do? Love the earth. Yes, that's what we would all do if given the freedom. The freedom to just pay attention is like, oh, no, I actually really like this place. You know what I mean? Like, how many more people have to win at capitalism? Next thing, they're in bloody Peru doing a plant that is a ceremony that's been existed for 80,000 years, bro. Yes, you're a hippie too. We all want to be hippies, right? Right. So I believe in us reconnecting to ourselves, which in turn is nature. Right. I've said this a lot because I love it. You guys know Monty Don, right? Monty Don, the gardener. Right. Legend. You think that's a mad link? Let me finish. Let me land. I'm pretty sure, I don't know if he'll say he is Buddhist, but he was dropping some Eastern philosophical genius to me, right, before a recent interview I had with him. And I said to him, I was trying to impress him at the beginning of this interview. And I went, yeah, Monty, I love going into nature every day with my dogs. It's one of my favorite things to do. And he went, I'm going to stop you there. That's one of my pet peeves. I was like, oh, I was like, damn, I've pissed off Monty Don already. I was going, and he went, no, listen, I just think that you're not going into nature. You are nature. And I was like, oh, damn, he's got me, man. I was like, click, click. Yeah, poetry slam. Let's go. Monty's just dropping bars. But he's not. But the thing is, it wasn't just that. He wasn't just saying that for that little phrase. He had a whole thesis behind it. His whole outlook on gardening is the idea that when you go into natural space, like, for example, he doesn't agree per se with like the philosophy behind rewilding, because the idea of rewilding is you remove humans and then plants can live wonderfully, right? Good in some spaces, but he said that one of the beautiful, we are part of nature, so we can go into a space, look at the space, learn about the space, and we can actually encourage growth. We can encourage natural prosperity because we understand that we can actually help an extension of ourselves. You know, littering, burning things, all of the things that, like, you know, a lot of the climate activists stand up for should be considered self-harm. You know, that is us ourselves. And that's why I feel profoundly sad when I see people like throwing litter out of a car or whatever, because I'm like, you don't even think this is you. You don't think this isn't an extension of your world, you know? So that's what I believe in. I believe in nature. I believe that plants and the world around us are there to be understood, listened to, learned about. I went through a big bout of grief recently, and I found genuine peace being surrounded by mountains and hills and quiet and nature. And I really think there's a big call. A lot of people are doing that. A lot of people are hiking. A lot of people are understanding on a deep, deep level that we're supposed to be reconnecting with that side of ourselves. So I believe in nature. That's what it is. Yeah, man. Facts, though.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing so vulnerably. Yeah. Would anyone like to ask a question? I can't even finish my sentence. The hands are going up already.
So we would love to hear from you. Single sentence questions is we love. And also, if you're here in Pagoda and you've never asked a question at Greenbelt, you don't think that you can ask a question, we want to hear from you. I would say that even if you're a teenager and you've got a question, get your hand up and we'll get to you as soon as we can. Especially, you've heard it from Jordan.
Thank you.
Okay, it's hard to, there's so many. Sometimes people do like multiple questions at once and then you answer all of them, right?
There we go, we got one.
Okay.
All right, okay. How much room for doubt and questioning is there in your journey right now?
How much room for doubt and questioning? Dude, like, too much. too much. I really, really mean this. Like, I am very open to chat being challenged. I actually crave it. As Isaac is my testament to that, he asked me just prior to this, are there any things you don't want to talk about? And I was like, no, please, if anything, ask me things that are actively uncomfortable, because I feel like that is how we grow, you know? And I literally doubt myself every day. That is the source for me, you know? And I have to live by that. Yeah, I might seem impassioned, and unfortunately I do slip into absolutes because I'm human, but I really do like to believe that I have the capacity for change if presented with, you know, a compelling case. What I won't do... Okay, yeah, go on. Oh, thank you. But I will say, if somebody just, you know, is being a annoying person...
Very good.
I'm probably less likely to respond, you know. I'll try to give them love, transcend it.
I've got a question about sort of social media influence on young people and how can they get a good role model from the TikTok algorithms, which present them driving down the wrong side of a road and making it seem like a good idea.
Yeah.
There doesn't seem to be anything good from social media that is presented automatically to them.
Yeah, it's such a hard question to answer, because obviously the issue of social media that we have is that the other side, like being combative, being risky, being provocative, is, I think it would be intellectually dishonest to say that's not compelling to all humans. Even us that consider ourselves, you know, well-meaning or whatever else, like we get drawn into that, right? We get drawn into conflict and whatever else. So... I guess it's approaching it with balance. I believe in this new social media ban. I really think it would be great for kids below 16 to not be on social media. And then similarly, like I do like to have an optimistic outlook. I do know that personally in my algorithm, because I watch videos of dads playing guitar with their baby on top of it, or you know, like I really do. Or I do like the. Oh, I shouldn't say that next batch year because I've. There's a woman who teaches Muay Thai to women, but she finds videos of women like kicking guys' asses. Well, I shouldn't. No. But I shouldn't say that. But there's ways of algorithm being shifted. And I think, look, I'm going to try and be myself as much as possible. And some people might like that. Redefine what it looks like to be a decent person in community. You know what I mean? But it's a hard battle. I don't have the answer for that. I just feel like we need to really try and bring... support the people who are doing dope stuff, you know, and changing what it looks like, shifting the PR, I think, you know what I mean? Like shifting the PR of hippies, for example. Do you know what I mean? God's sake. Can wear all that. Just not always harem pants, not every day. I wear all types of things.
Where are we going? Are we over there? There we go, down there.
Hi. How would your conversation be with women that are within the manosphere, you know, like the whole trad wives, people like Pearl and stuff like that?
Oh my God, I can't stand Pearl.
Same.
Wait, what am I saying? How would I deal with them?
Yeah, like what would the conversation be with, like, you know, trying to change their mind and stuff like that with, you know?
I would absolutely love to be in conversation with these people. Like I really think, actually, this is an answer to your point about that. I can do a double answer. There's been a weird window, I don't know if you've noticed, where one of the stances from people more associated with the left was not wanting to validate people on the right by even showing up to their conversations. And I think personally that was a misstep. I think it's been really positive to go into those spaces and provide compelling arguments, because sometimes well, often, someone like Pearl unravels very quickly. The weird thing about Pearl is she's been unraveled many times and still continues. I don't know what's going on with her. I honestly think she's thick. I'm sorry. But like, and also because she gets money from it, but like, it's the responsibility of people to challenge those people in those environments. But me personally, I wouldn't say it's my focus, you know? Like, I want to just show people a path. I'm happy to hear what she thinks is working for her. It clearly isn't. And it's an interesting conversation, right? Like, I would meet those conversations with genuine intrigue. I'm not looking to go there and take someone down. I know in this environment, I've been immediately reactive about her because I do get frustrated. But if I was actually in front of her, I would be asking questions, right? Because I want to understand it. If a trad wife was in front of me, I got nothing wrong with choosing that as a, I'm liberal in a true sense. If you're not harming anyone, then fine. If you want to live like it's the Stone Age or whatever. I don't know what trad wives do. What they do? Do they make babies out of clay? I don't know what happens. What? I actually don't know what they do. Anyway, if they're not harming anybody, it's fine. Like, you know, so it's like, I just ask them, like, how do you make banana bread? I don't know. Trad wives.
Where are we going next?
Do you think that's harming?
Oh, there we are.
Is that harming by... I don't know.
Hiya. I was going to use my sentence for a thank you, really, more than a question. I work in supporting schools with their relationships, sex and health education. Okay. And without making either of you feel uncomfy that you crawl up your own bums, thank you for being part of the movement. It's really important that young men and young people have positive influences in that online space. I support schools in Stoke-on-Trent with their relationship,
Listen,
sex and health
big up
education.
You. What's your name?
And my name's Ellie.
Everyone clap Ellie. That's legend stuff. No? You're doing the work, Ellie. Thank you for doing the work. Big up. I don't think I've been to Stoke. Oh, I did. I went recently.
More Ellies.
Yeah, more Ellies, man. Big up you. Thank you so much. You don't get paid enough.
Hi, Jordan, I really touched on something you said about nature. Awesome. I left church a few years ago just because I've fallen out of love with the church and what they stand for. But when I go out in nature, walk up hills, go up mountains, that's when I feel God the most.
Right.
I feel emotional, I feel close,
right.
And I sense God.
Yes.
And that has been revelation to me. So I just want, the question to you is, where's the place where you've felt nature, felt something greater than you, and has it made you feel that there is faith? I know it sounds like you don't believe in God, but has it made you question your doubt, your there isn't a God feel that?
Sorry, let me be clear about my position, sir. I question, my questioning is organized religion, right? So my thing is, I find it odd where, firstly, I've got authority issues, and if there is supposedly a paternal authority, I'm obviously not going to get along with that person. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm just like, what do you know? But in terms of a collective spirit, like spirituality, 1,000%. And I have like the closest I have felt to nature is literally, I'd say, in the last 2 months. For those who do follow me on Instagram, I keep posting these carousels of me, Peak District, Lake District, because it's the information I hear about plants, it feels so like it's in that space is where all of this like Western rational scientific thinking, it loses its foothold, right? So just for the sake of enjoyment, I'd love to share this because I love thinking about it. So the ayahuasca ceremonies that everybody does, one of my favorite pieces of information about ayahuasca is that Western botanists, or through the Western scientific lens, they don't understand how the indigenous people managed to find a vine and a plant that were miles apart from each other, looked nearly identical to every other plant in that part of the Amazon. They joined those two plants together and they reacted with the exact gut enzyme that regulates DMT. They don't know how they did it. And when they ask indigenous people, they say that the plants told them, right? And they just go, trial and error, you know what I mean? And it's like, it literally statistically would have been insane, right? And then to the same degree, Reiki, do you know about this? Reiki has been proven as working, right? Under through the scientific method. It is like objectively proven through peer-reviewed science studies. Do they know why Reiki works? No. All they say is placebo. It's not a good enough reason. So that just reminds me that there is this energetic magic that lives beyond our limited forms of thinking. So in that, to that degree, no, I'm not sat there cynically saying there's nothing beyond us. I feel closer to that beyond where I just, yeah, simplify my outlook and go like, I'm just going to look at this tree. Okay. That for me is godly, like to look at a tree, bro. You know?
Thank you.
But hey, I don't want to be seen as a cynic too. I'm deeply spiritual, I like to believe anyway.
We're all the way over there at the back.
Cool. Hey, I'm a secondary school music teacher and I work...
Legend, what's your name, bro? What's
Dom.
Your name?
Dom.
Dom. Everybody clap Dom. Right now. Give up, Dom, you're a legend and you don't Cheers. Get paid enough.
Thank you. I work in a school with a lot of difficult backgrounds and lots of deprived families. What would you suggest to bring troubled boys into a meaningful conversation about toxic masculinity and both respecting themselves and others?
Wow. That's a big one, Dom. I'll be real. this is a flawed answer. That's my disclaimer, right? I don't know. I'm not engaging every day with as many boys as you would be, but I do engage with some teenage boys, whether they're extended family or otherwise. One thing that I find really fascinating is ultimately that in life, I'm sure we can all accept that moments of like projected disdain towards another is often, if not always, a reflection of the disdain towards ourselves, right? So if I am like falling foul to ideas that involve me going outwards and saying like I don't like that person or this blame, really and truly, like if we're balanced enough to do it, the way to counter that is to just push into the love. So by the way, it's very hard sometimes. I'm not thinking that it's like, oh, you can only just tell people that, but with teenage boys, like, bro, whenever I'm with, like, there's one young man in my life, like extended family, he, I'm sure you'll meet boys like this, barely says anything. He's clearly going through, I mean, his voice broke like last week. Like, he's so awkward, uncomfortable. Like, he doesn't know what's going on. He shows me the wildest stuff on the internet, which is clearly toxic for his mind. But you know what I say to him? I'm like, bro, you look amazing today, man. Like, you know, like, oh, you look, you know, that was really great what you said. You know, I love spending time with you, you know? Like, and he hates it, right? He hates it. I'm like, I love you so much, bro. Honestly. And he's there. And then he looks at me and goes like, Arsenal is shit.
And he would be right.
He's not right. West Ham. Move on.
We got time for one more question before we leave the room.
Hey. Hey, Jordan. Thank you so much. Yes. Hello. Hi. Hi. You said towards the beginning that you were uncertain about that word good
yes.
and being a good guy. And yeah. I just wondered if you might want to consider the word beloved.
Oh, my God.
I love that, man.
I'm going to record you saying that and send it to like 3 ex-girlfriends, I think. So like 3... I wasn't always like this, sir. I'll be real. I wasn't like this. And I do often consider that, you know, that is one of the bizarre contradictions of my own existence and often in the world, you know, like I have hurt people and harmed people in my journey towards being less hurtful and less harmful, as well as myself, you know? And so, yeah, I think I sometimes imagine how like painful it will be for my ex-girlfriend of 8 years ago to go onto her Instagram and see a bunch of women being like, oh, I wish there were more people like Jordan, because she definitely didn't wish there were more people like me in 2014, you know? So like, that's why it's more complex for me. We're all on a journey. It's non-linear. I'm going to say things that upset people sometimes. And I also find it incredibly difficult to receive compliments and love. And I do want to try and brave myself into welcoming that. And I really appreciate that people want to share that. And I will push it back and say, actually, if somebody does want to be lovely to me and be kind, I see that more as a reflection of the lovingness and kindness in them. And they should be proud of the fact they even want to offer that. So, yeah, there we are. That. Big up.
Have I got time for one really quick question?
You?
Yeah.
Yeah, go on.
One really quick question from me. Thank you so much for everything you shared.
Thank you, Isaac. Bro. You're a G, man. Big up, stuff. Isaac and Omar. Yay! You let me yap, bro. I was this close to interviewing you, man. I was going to reverse this whole thing. I really was.
Don't do that, man. This is like the most encouraging environment I've ever been in my whole entire life.
Yeah, everyone is.
One of the things that annoys me is when most people in one space think exactly the same.
Yeah.
Because it's like the people that we're trying to reach.
Yeah.
What do we need to do in our weeks, our Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Fridays to be more helpful reaching those kind of people? If you could say one thing. or two or three if you want.
Okay, so yeah, very confused about this at the moment. This is something I think about a lot because I'm in two minds. I obviously shared earlier that I do think it's almost a responsibility for people who have the capacity to be able to engage with people that they find distasteful or whatever it is. I think it's really important to do that. I personally think that's a skill of mine. I don't feel overwhelmed in the presence of someone who doesn't like even agree I should exist or thinks I should leave the country or thinks that people I love don't deserve the respect that I think they deserve. Like, I can talk to those people. So I would like to do that. And I think that's my service in that way. But I also think it's like, I'm not sure I'm that mad at echo chambers to a degree, man. Like echo chambers, if it emboldens ideas that promote separation, but in terms of just actually feeling connected and unified by a shared belief, I think that's beautiful. I feel like it's really important to be around people who, you know, you can just like feel comfortable with, and that can grow outwards. And then hopefully those people, I'm sorry I've gone over time, but I just want to quickly explain why I think this, right? When I was trying to get the attention of young men and boys last year, I'd done a lot of research on men, and I was thinking about things like the term patriarchy, thinking about things like toxic masculinity, and I tried to go, how do I shift myself in order to be more palatable to young men, right? And I started thinking about things like the fact that I've got a nose stud or the color of the clothes I'm wearing or whatever else. And about 4, 5, 6 months in, I felt miserable. And I thought, like, why am I suppressing myself in order to reach an audience who are then probably going to accuse people of pandering? That is me pandering. I'm literally editing myself. So I was like, F that. I'm going to be the other thing. I'm going to be unapologetically myself with chest. And like, if people want to come on a journey, they're coming on it for real. Because I haven't had to shift who I am in order to be accepted. So that's why I feel like it's actually cool to be in community in that way and be unapologetic about yourself. So I think that's a good thing. I think it's good to be in this. This is dope. Like, everyone here is going to feel good.
Let's clap for everyone. Everyone clap for everyone.
You big yourselves up. That's so kind. Thank you all for coming. You're all dope. I hope you'll have a great weekend. Thank you so much.
So really quickly. Yeah. Really quickly. What's your name?
Alice.
Hello, Alice. I owe you £3. I'm gonna find you £3.
Alice, how are
you? I'm gonna make sure you get your money.
So Isaac and Jordan, thank you so much for a fabulous afternoon.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.